I thought it was interesting in your question because you asked something about how material are they, right? Something like that.
Yeah. Is the spirit material?
Yeah. Because I think they are, in the sense that also thoughts have a material aspect to them, right? On a subtle level, right? Well, so for instance, I don't know how much of Jung you know, but Jung has had experiences which he describes. I think he even made maybe his master's thesis about it. I'm not completely sure about this, but about poltergeists, you know, and when there are certain tensions in a home, also emotional tensions, that sometimes, you know, something falls from, right? And so there's a material aspect to that, right? But it's not my, I wouldn't say it's not my specialty, and in a way I'm happy about that. Because I don't necessarily would like to work with dubious spirits. I love to work with the energy of saints, you know. I mean, you name a saint, and it's, I'm okay, you know. But on occasion it happens, on occasion. Like, for instance, I may have talked in class about that, I don't remember. Not this time, but there is a woman, it's a whole story, you know, so I will go shortly. But she has been sexually abused by her mother, who is no longer alive. And of course a long, long journey, you know, as these journeys are. And she came to seek me out because maybe 6-7 years or even more after her mom had passed, her mom was back. At least in her experience, of course, it's always, you know. And I knew she's a very sincere person. I'm still working with her. But that's a very typical thing to seek out a shaman for. You know, you can go to a doctor for this. Even a psychiatrist is not necessarily the place. So people, if you would know a shaman, you would go for it, right? So I said, sure, let's. And I had immediately, it was a case of empathy. You know, I liked the person and I had empathy, but detachment. I'm not myself possessed by spirits, you know, and don't have an abuse history or sexual. Yeah. So she lies at some point on the table and I'm doing my shamanic work really as all, but all of a sudden, you know, it's heating up, you know, and I beg and order the spirit of the mother to go. And I feel it going, and in a specific corner of my room, and it goes out. You know? That's my experience of it. And I was curious, because often I don't really know what's going on. You know, I'm just doing my work as good as I can, but I don't know. But this one was very specific for me. So the client, in her experience, she also felt something big leaving in the shape of her mother. But she hadn't been able to sleep well because of all that, you know. And so I said, well, you know, it was a good session for me, let's see. And so that one session was instrumental in her no longer being possessed by her mother. And of course there is no proof, certainly not. But it's interesting that it's one of the few times that I feel specifically a direction and, quote, an entity or a spirit that leaves, you know? So even based on that one experience, I would say that spirits have a material form. And of course, there's many, many books written about haunted houses and all that stuff, right? Yeah, which I think, you know, is, it would be very strange if none of that were based on any fact. It would be strange, you know. I mean, could happen. But I remember also as a child going to Gravenstein with the torture chambers. Yeah, that was horrible. Absolutely horrible. And I probably had some nightmares about that for a while. And then I went with Kathy at some point, and now there is a sound healer, I think his name is Marcel Hebelink, I think, who sits there with his harp, and when people have left the castle, he is playing music, and I think it just releases all the stuff around people. He's aware of it, you know, and he has some beautiful albums, you know.
Mm.
Yeah. And, or another, I mean, these are anecdotes, you know, but still, since we were talking about the war, you know. So, were you in that group with Josef? No, huh? Okay, but you know Josef, huh? No, oh, okay. He used to work here in Bar-le-Comte, and he came, he's the one who donated that big drum we have in our room.
Mm.
So, as a preparation for his group, before we did the initiations, in the end of the second year, he had an idea, because he knows the area very well, to go someplace, I think to Arduino, I believe. And then we ended up, almost accidentally, even though there are no such things, right, at the Maginot line in France.
Mm.
And we came at a place where there is a plaque hanging, because in the... I'm thinking now, I'm not sure, was it the Second World War, I think the Second World War. Anyway, there is a big tragedy happened there for the French. A whole regiment of people from North Africa, mostly Algerians, were gassed by a German... There was some kind of an explosion. Anyway, it's a very dark, dark spot there, you know. So we were a bit surprised that all of a sudden here we are with our group of 12, you know, and we had our drums with us. So we decided to do a ritual there, and it was a beautiful ritual. Very peaceful, but with enough strong drumming. Took about half an hour. And you know, all of us, we were absolutely elated. We were full of joy. It was something that had happened, not just on the level of our emotions, but we couldn't explain it. We felt stuff had left the earth there. You know? And that's something that shamans work with, you know? And not just shamans, you know? Other spiritual groups, like some group go to Auschwitz, right, to pray there, you know? And to, yeah. But yeah, I do think that spirits have a material presence that can be felt, especially if you're sensitive. Or if you're in a bit of a trance state, you know, and you yeah. Yeah.
Let me come to trance, but maybe I need to...
Yeah, and you say whenever you want. Yeah.
3 o'clock?
It's almost 3 o'clock.
One more?
Yeah, sure.
Well, there's many, yeah. Or maybe... no, I think I prefer another question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, about how important is a specific place for shamanism?
Yeah.
Or the... Yeah. I think it might be related to the local totems.
Yes, right.
I don't know. It's like... it's a question that I haven't been... The one on the specific place. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I think there are many circumstances where the place can play a big, big role, you know. Like, of course, I don't think we would have been able, say, to do this work. And, of course, we never know for sure. But I just go with what my heart knows. You know, I feel that our little group did good work there at the Maginot Line, but also that we were gifted. Of course, it was the perfect way to prepare ourselves for initiation, you know? It's not like we were like, right? It's a give and take, and it's amazing how that works in all realms, you know? But in the shamanic work, it's very, very obvious. So we needed to go there to do that work. I don't think we could do it from our room. Even though today I also felt, yeah, we were connected with Gaza, you know. We have a strong connection with Ton. You know, Ton comes here very often. So there are these things that can facilitate shamanic sessions. When there is some direct direct grounding in a place where the work needs to be done, or when you are in a sacred place. Like when I'm in my own office where I've been working, you know, for, I don't know, 25 years, and many presences are there, there has been meditation there, you know. So that's one of my power spots, right? And I sit down and I use my special Tibetan drum. You know, I mean, that's perfect. That's perfect, right? But also, though, when the intention is strong, any place where the work needs to happen can happen, at least in my work. Just once, I worked with shamans from Siberia who came to Oregon. There was three of them. Two of them had never, ever left their village, ever, but had been there, had been shamans their whole life. And they were interesting shamans. And one was a younger person, and she had traveled. But so there was the first time in the US, right? First time outside of the village, right? So when they were starting their work and they were calling in the spirits they work with, they were so surprised because the spirits wouldn't come right away. And so I was thinking, well, how bizarre. Because I personally have never experienced that. If I call upon Kuan Yin, you know, I mean, it feels like Kuan Yin is there. And so their way of viewing that was, well, our totems, our guides, they live in Siberia, in that village where we are. That's where they live. So they first have to get here, you know? And so, of course, in a way, that's the beauty, you know, whatever you believe or whether, however you're trained, that also becomes a certain reality. You can't escape that, you know? And you can learn from that, but today's shamans, most of the, I mean, certainly me, I mean, I've been in airplanes so often, you know, and it becomes like a natural thing that whatever the work is about travels with me. And I've had, one of the first time I came to Belgium, I have a friend, she's a homeopathic doctor, she's a clairvoyant, and she said, Frank, there is a native Indian with you. And to tell you the truth, I had also felt that my work here in Belgium was different from Portland, and that here especially people want this contact with the Native Americans, whereas there it's more normal that, you know, so people, they more want some connection, say, with Egypt, you know, because I also have an Egyptian connection, yeah. But when I'm here, it never fails. There is a very, very strong, and lately it's been more defined around Sitting Bull, for instance, you know, Sitting Bull, right? And so it's not that I'm doing something, there's just installs itself in your field, you know? And of course, if I can choose, which I often can, I like to work in places that are protected, like here, you know? It's you're away from... But I also teach at a massage school, which is not an obvious place, you know, because there's other classes going on nearby, and I have to move sometimes rooms because it's too much noise and all that. But the work that happens is also on a very high level and perfect, certainly for the group of people that are there, you know. But, for instance, going to Bhutan, our longest-going group, Padmasambhava, announced himself in a morning meditation in the third year as the main shamanic guide for that group. And it took me by surprise. But it was clear enough, strong enough, that I spoke what I heard, and then people were curious who is Padmasambhava, and I knew a little bit, but not a whole lot, you know?
So he spoke through you?
Well, or the guidance spoke through me. I'm not really sure that whole thing, you know, what is that, my over-self, you know, is that void? I don't really know. And I'm almost happy that I don't know. So it does not become a new mythology, you know, something like that, you know? Yeah, so now when I was in Bhutan, I had no idea, but Padmasambhava is in every single place there. He is the guy from Bhutan, the shamanic guy from Bhutan. So, you know, I had transmission after transmission whenever I would visit. Almost every day we went to a temple, you know. And he's depicted with these big, big white eyes, and he has 8 different manifestations in the tankas. And I would just, I could have stayed for hours in every single temple, but we couldn't, you know, and it was okay. But I would just look at it, you know. And so the transmission would just come in, you know. And that transmission I could not have received if I had not gone to Bhutan.
And what do you call transmission? Like, can you, like...
Yeah, like a very... It's almost as if... And I've had that in Egypt also, specifically, or in India for that matter, that the painting, because a tanka is a painting, becomes alive. It really becomes alive. And so on the material level, there is like a shimmering, you know, like, which I never have. I mean, I love, say, Van Gogh, you know, I love those paintings and many other paintings, you know. But there is not that specific energetic shamanic transmission, you know? Yeah. I would compare it more to the transmission, say, from Mother Mira or Amma. You know, so something that starts vibrating on a specific frequency that's connected to consciousness, you know? And that stay, I feel that stays with me. I can... Then later I can call it up if I want to. Mm. Becomes part of what's in the medicine bag, you know? Like a doctor, some homeopathic doctor has that little stuff, you know? So the shaman. And Joska, he gave me once, maybe I mentioned that in your group, I can't remember, but that he, when he was drumming for himself also, that different totem animals would come, and that they became then associated with the drum. He always used the same drum. Or maybe he had 2 drums. You know, I think maybe one broke at some point. But when he would play his drum, after many years of doing that, he had a bigger assortment of guides and totem animals. And some were, say, the specht, or... Krishna, or a bird called the Jan van Gent. It was very specific, you know? Yeah. Or perfumes, you know? And he got very excited whenever there was an addition to the spectrum. And when he gave me the list, maybe there was like 44 different ones or something like that. Yeah.
So it's more a kind of energy that you then use afterwards than really concrete information. Or insight.
Yes, yes. It's not information in the sense of scientific information, you know, or even knowledge, but it's a vibrational information. Yeah. Yeah, and that implants itself, I feel, into my energetic field, mostly in the heart, but also, I would say, in the on the bone, level of the bone structure, something like that. Because it's, I think, it wants a little bit of density, you know, so it goes from the more immaterial to the more material. Yeah, because shamanism is always, that's what your questions were also about, between the dimensions, you know, which is why it's fun to initiate, for instance, at dawn or at dusk. It's just extra, or at spring equinox or summer equinox. It's when some cycle, in something is overlapping, Right?
And the intersections.
Yeah, all the intersections. Yeah. So where the linear kind of bends into what is not so linear, right? Where one dimension goes into another dimension. And I think, because that's another question you have, that these dimensions are probably, of course, these are just concepts, of course, you know, but still, science is also just concepts, right? I mean, so it's one dimension that's nested into another dimension, into another dimension, into another dimension, right? On and on. And as far as we know, there's no limit to that. It just goes on and on. And when the mind becomes more multidimensional, it's a very plastic mind. And when somebody like Einstein comes in, you know, with a formidable, formidable capacity that he can contain more than anybody else on the planet on that particular level, you know, then a big breakthrough is made, right? And then sometimes it takes 100 years for regular science to catch up and to say, hey, he was right, you know? And he's just sitting there smoking his pipe or something in his, but he's holding it, right? He would concentrate for hours and work it out, right? Yeah. And so for shamans it's something similar, you know, it's a kind of a thing that you apply yourself, and of course you learn from the previous lineage of shamans also, why this transmission often happens from person to person, you know? Yeah.
As bodily experiences.
Exactly, yeah. Because that, it's important not to deny that level. Sometimes in spirituality there's a split between, say, the body and then what's not the body. And in shamanism, it's seen that the body is relative, of course, but that it's also the place to do the work. Yeah. Shaman typically is quite embodied. And prior to meeting Josca, I certainly had lost big parts of me being embodied here. And that was one of his first lessons, you know. He would say, if you wanna go there, go there. And it always took me a while to figure out what he meant by that, you know?
Mm.
Yeah. Yes. Which is often the way a shaman works, you know? You still have to do the work yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. But they point some fingers.
Yeah. Okay,
Yeah, we have to go.
Yeah, we have to go.
Well, that was very sweet.
Yeah, thank you, friend.